Right now, down in Florida, there's this passenger train that has literally doubled its revenue. It's packed its cars with passengers, and it operates right through the heart of the fastest growing state in the country.
Yeah, the demand is definitely there.
Right. And to anyone watching it fly by, I mean, it looks like an absolute triumph of modern infrastructure.
Oh, for sure.
And yet it is quietly hurtling toward this, well, a $5 billion financial cliff.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking you, our listener, inside a massive high-stakes infrastructure investment.
Because we want to understand exactly how a project can, succeed so wildly on the tracks while simultaneously fighting for its very life on the balance sheet.
Exactly. And for you listening, whether you track municipal bonds or you just want to understand how massive private infrastructure projects actually get funded.
Right, because it's not simple.
No, not at all. This is the perfect case study. Our mission today is to analyze the investment value, the structural strengths, and the severe existential risks of the Florida Development Finance Corporation revenue bonds.
Specifically, we're looking at the $985 million remarketing of the Series 2024A bonds.
Right, for the Brightline Florida Passenger Rail Project. And the sources we've compiled for you include the intricate bond offering details, some honestly, seriously alarming credit rating downgrades from late 2025 and early 2026, and the raw financial performance data.
Which is crucial, right? Because analyzing a privately owned intercity passenger rail system means you have to constantly weigh two entirely different realities.
Right, the physical asset versus the math.
Exactly. You have the physical asset serving millions of people on one side, and then the rigid, unforgiving demands of the municipal bond market on the other.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
Because to really grasp the tension here, we need to understand what this physical asset actually is.
Yeah, the scale is massive.
The sheer scale of the project is undeniably impressive. Brightline connects Miami to Orlando.
Which is huge.
Right. You're talking about 235 miles of track slicing through a region with demographic tailwinds that look more like a hurricane. I mean, Florida's population hit 23.3 million in 2024.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the market potential is just enormous.
Right.
Orlando alone saw the 10th largest numeric population growth in the United States recently. They added over 55,000 residents.
Wow.
And on top of that, Florida hosted 34.3 million visitors in just the third quarter of 2025 alone.
So the people are there.
Right. From a pure transit corridor perspective, linking those two massive hubs makes fundamental economic sense.
And the data shows people are actually using it. Looking at their top line growth, Brightline's revenue more than doubled.
Literally doubled.
Yeah, jumping from $88 million in 2023 to $188 million in 2024.
Which is incredible growth.
And total passenger trips grew to 2.8 million. They completely finished their fleet expansion, bringing in these beautiful seven-car train sets. And by December 2024, their long-haul ridership saw this massive 40% year-over-year increase.
Yeah, I mean, it reads exactly like a tech startup pitch deck.
Totally. Exponential growth, huge market capture, doubling revenues. I mean, it sounds like a startup disguised as a railroad.
It does read like a startup, and that is precisely the cognitive dissonance at the heart of this bond offering.
What do you mean?
Well, they're operating on a software startup's hyper-growth timeline,
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
But they are anchored to the brutal capital requirements of heavy infrastructure.
Right, because laying 235 miles of steel rail isn't like scaling a cloud application.
Exactly. It requires an ocean of upfront capital. So what we're watching is a high-speed race between their revenue ramp-up, which again, genuinely impressive,
Right.
and the crushing weight of the debt they took on to build the tracks in the first place.
Because you don't build a 235-mile railroad with just top-line revenue.
No, you build it with debt.
Huge amounts of debt. And here's where it gets really interesting, because that brings us to the actual balance sheet, which is frankly terrifying.
It's grim.
Earning $188 million in revenue sounds fantastic until you flip the page and see the company reported a net loss of $549 million for that exact same year.
Yeah, that $500 million loss on $188 million in revenue tells you almost everything you need to know about how this capital structure is currently functioning.
It's just bleeding.
Right. The fixed costs of maintaining the physical network, combined with the cost of capital, are just overwhelmingly dwarfing the operational gains.
The expenses are just eating them alive. Looking at the 2024 numbers, $178 million went to interest payments alone.
You have to sink in.
Right. That means practically their entire gross revenue was erased just servicing the debt.
Before they even paid a conductor or bought fuel or maintained a single train.
Exactly. I mean, this is like buying a multi-million dollar mansion on a...
On a credit card.
Yes, on a credit card. And then you throw in another $218 million in refinancing costs, plus $150 million operational cost overrun in 2024.
The math looks impossible.
So if interest payments negate revenue from day one, how did anyone underwrite this $5 billion debt load to begin with?
Well, they underwrote it based on forecasts.
Huh.
The entire financial model for carrying $5 billion in debt relied on highly aggressive ridership projections that, well, simply failed to materialize.
How bad was the miss?
The original bond documents projected that by 2025, Brightline would be carrying over 6 million riders.
Okay.
But the actual ridership for 2025 came in at roughly 3.1 million.
Wait, I have to stop you there. These are sophisticated Wall Street models backing a multi-billion dollar municipal bond offering.
Oh, absolutely.
How do you miss a passenger projection by 3 million people? I mean, is that just typical corporate hubris? Or did something fundamental change in the market that the models just couldn't predict?
It's a combination of both, honestly. Exacerbated by awful timing.
Like COVID.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A lot of these initial projections were formulated with pre-COVID assumptions about daily business commuting patterns.
Oh, right. Corporate travel.
Yeah. When hybrid work became entrenched, that daily, highly predictable commuter volume just shrank.
Wow.
Furthermore, modeling behavior change is notoriously difficult.
Yeah.
I mean, Florida is a state fundamentally built around the automobile.
Right. Everyone drives.
So convincing millions of people to abandon the Interstate 95 and Florida's turnpike corridors, that requires a massive cultural shift.
And Wall Street models don't really account for culture.
No. They often assume a linear, predictable adoption rate for new infrastructure. But human behavior just doesn't always cooperate.
So they essentially built a capital structure for a best-case scenario that didn't happen.
Exactly.
Exponential top-line growth means absolutely nothing mathematically if the starting baseline of your forecast was wildly overestimated.
Because the debt doesn't shrink.
Right. If you build a $5 billion debt structure, assuming 6 million people will pay for a ticket, and only half of them show up, the math fractures immediately.
Wow.
The massive fixed costs of heavy rail don't scale down just because the passengers aren't there. The debt doesn't care about your ramp-up curve.
Which means if they are burning through cash this fast, that well has to dry up eventually.
It always does.
So if you're evaluating this bond remarketing today, your immediate question has to be, how are they actually paying their current bills?
Right.
And looking at the documents from late 2025 and early 2026, the answer is that the well is actively running dry.
We are observing a textbook liquidity crisis unfolding in real time.
Let's track how this unraveled because it escalated quickly.
It really did.
In July 2025, Brightline deferred interest payments on $1.2 billion in bonds. They simply skipped the payment.
Then they skipped another payment in early 2026. But the massive red flag went up in January 2026 when they made an unscheduled draw on their debt service reserve account, or DSRA,
yes,
just to fund an interest payment. I mean, that is basically breaking the glass in case of an emergency, right?
What's fascinating here is that drawing from the DSRA is a critical threshold to cross.
How so?
Think of a debt service reserve account not as an emergency checking account, but as a structural shock absorber built into the bond covenants.
Okay.
In this case, it was sized to cover roughly 12 months of interest and principal payments to protect bondholders if revenues briefly dip.
So it's supposed to be the ultimate safety net.
Exactly. So the fact that operational cash flow was so insufficient that they had to tap the DSRA in January 2026, well, that signals profound distress.
Because they're eating into the safety net.
Yes. And the trajectory of their available liquidity confirms it. I mean, they dropped from $191 million in December 2025 to $160 million by March 2026.
So doing the math on that burn rate, they are down to roughly 225 days of cash on hand.
Precisely. And when liquidity tightens like that, the rating agencies are forced to react.
Right. And they did.
Oh, yeah. In January 2026, Fitch downgraded the series 2024 bonds to a CCC rating.
Ouch.
And a couple months later, in March 2026, S&P Global Ratings downgraded the tax-exempt bonds to CCC before making the highly unusual move of withdrawing the rating entirely.
Wow.
S&P went on record stating there was a, quote, virtual certainty of financial restructuring by mid-2026.
I mean, when S&P calls a restructuring of virtual certainty, that is about as loud as a rating agency can yell.
It's alarm bell.
So for someone who doesn't trade municipal debt every day, what does dropping into the CCC tier actually mean?
Well, in the municipal market, investors are typically looking for highly stable, tax-advantaged income.
Right, safe bets.
Exactly. So a CCC rating is practically radioactive in that environment. It explicitly signals that the issuer is currently vulnerable to non-payment and is entirely dependent on favorable economic conditions just to survive the year.
And then dropping to CCC.
When you drop to CCC, the market views a default or a distressed exchange as imminent.
And a distressed exchange is essentially when the company goes to the bondholders and asks them to take a hit, right? Like, are bondholders just sitting around waiting for the other shoe to drop?
Essentially, yes. It's when a company realizes it can't pay back 100 cents on the dollar.
Okay.
So they approach the creditors and say, look, if you force us into bankruptcy, the legal fees will drain the remaining cash and you might get 10 cents. Instead, accept 50 cents on the dollar and some new longer-term bonds, and we can keep operating.
Wow, so it forces the bondholder to take a significant financial haircut to avoid total ruin.
Exactly. The withdrawal of the rating by S&P indicates they believe the existing capital structure is fundamentally non-viable and that this haircut is practically guaranteed.
And as if a looming restructuring wasn't enough, when a company is bleeding cash this rapidly, you usually start to see intense operational strain.
Oh, it always bleeds into operations.
Yeah, looking through these sources, Brightline is facing massive off-balance sheet liabilities regarding operations, safety, and legal battles.
The operational friction is severely compounding their financial fragility right now.
Let's discuss the safety record. And to be clear for you listening, we are looking strictly at the data provided in the source documents. We aren't taking sides here.
Right, just looking at the facts.
But the facts are that Brightline has been labeled the deadliest major passenger railroad in the U.S. based on deaths per mile traveled.
Yeah.
Since 2017, there have been over 185 fatalities involving Brightline trains, which averages out to roughly one death every 13 days of service.
It is a sobering statistic.
It really is.
Now, the context provided by the sources indicates that the vast majority of these incidents involve pedestrians trespassing on the tracks or drivers circumventing crossing gates.
Right, rather than operational or mechanical failures by the train crew.
Exactly. However, from a pure investment and risk analysis standpoint, the reason it matters so much is the sheer frequency.
Because of the liability.
Right. Every single incident creates a massive ongoing legal and reputational exposure.
Yeah, and there are physical mitigation efforts underway. The U.S. Department of Transportation obligated over $42 million in safety grants.
Which helps.
Yeah, specifically for installing heavy fencing, upgrading grade crossings, and deploying trespassing alert systems. But the damage to the public perception is intense.
It's hard to shake that kind of reputation.
And speaking of public perception, they also managed to completely alienate the local South Florida commuters who were originally supposed to be a core user base.
Yeah, they implemented what we call a yield management strategy, but the execution caused intense backlash.
Explain yield management in this context, because to me, looking at the numbers, it just looks like they priced out their locals to chase the tourists.
Well, that's exactly what happened.
Okay, because they eliminated the $10 commuter passes for daily riders in South Florida and shifted to $35 packages.
Right.
And the direct result was a 40% drop in South Florida short-haul commuters. This feels like a classic New Coke disaster. You alienate your core daily commuter base to chase higher margins.
This raises an important question about strategy, because yield management is the exact same pricing model airlines use.
Oh, sure.
An airline would rather fly a seat empty than sell it for $50 if they believe they can hold out and sell it to a last-minute business traveler for $500.
Makes sense for planes.
Right. Brightline realized their long-haul Miami to Orlando tickets generated drastically higher margins than moving someone just two stops down the coast.
So they prioritized the Orlando trip.
Because a train only has a finite number of seats. So they changed the pricing to reserve capacity for the high-paying Orlando traveler.
But the downside is you alienate your most consistent customers.
Precisely. By aggressively pricing out the daily commuter, they hollowed out a recession-resistant, predictable revenue stream.
Wow.
When tourist travel dips, you really want those daily commuters paying the light bill.
And it doesn't even stop there. On top of the commuter backlash and the safety mitigation costs, they were hit with a lawsuit in August 2025.
Oh, the FEC suit.
Yeah, by the Florida East Coast Railway. And they're the actual host railroad whose corridor Brightline shares.
Right.
The lawsuit is regarding their plans for Miami commuter services. So you have a severe safety reputation problem, an alienated local base, and active litigation over track rights.
The perfect storm.
Right. When you take all of these unpredictable off-balance sheet liabilities into a restructuring negotiation, how does that impact the company's ability to survive?
It absolutely poisons the well.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Restructuring $5 billion in debt isn't just an exercise in moving numbers around on a spreadsheet.
Right.
It requires building confidence, bringing multiple angry parties to the table,
Yeah.
and almost always securing new capital to bridge the liquidity gap.
And investors hate uncertainty.
Exactly. Investors, especially distressed debt funds, despise unpredictable liabilities. If an institutional investor is looking at injecting cash, a pending lawsuit over foundational track rights is a deal breaker.
Not to mention the safety issues.
Exactly. Combined with a constant threat of public liability claims from ongoing crossing incidents, it makes it impossible to accurately price the risk.
So they just walk away.
It boxes the company into a corner where potential saviors simply walk away because the legal unknowns are too vast.
So what does this all mean? Which brings up the ultimate question for you, the listener, given everything we've just covered.
A cash burn.
Right. The 225 days of cash left, the $549 million net loss, the lawsuits, and the virtual certainty of a distressed exchange.
Yeah.
Why would anyone hold these bonds? What is the actual safety net protecting the investors' capital?
The answer lies in the incredibly complex structure of the municipal bond offering itself.
Okay.
It was designed with deep layers of armor, and even though some of those layers are failing, others provide distinct legal protections.
So the first layer is the collateral. The bonds are special limited obligations secured by the trust estate. That includes project revenues, but more importantly, mortgages on the actual real property, the rolling stock, which are those really expensive Siemens train
Very
sets.
expensive.
Right. And first priority security interests in their registered intellectual property, like copyrights and trademarks.
And that physical collateral holds immense intrinsic value.
Sure.
Premium South Florida real estate and modern functional train sets are tangible assets that could be liquidated or leveraged in a bankruptcy scenario.
Right. But the bond covenants also require specific financial behavior, most notably a total senior debt service coverage ratio, or DSCR, of 1.30x, meaning they are legally supposed to be generating 30% more operating cash than what they strictly need to pay their debt service, acting as a buffer.
Exactly.
But obviously, if they are pulling cash out of their reserve accounts just to make interest payments, they are deeply violating the spirit and the mechanics of that covenant.
Which leads us to the ultimate mitigant. The real reason this entire bond offering is so unique.
Bond insurance.
This is the crux of the entire investment analysis.
Assured Guaranty Municipal Corp, or AGM, provides an insurance policy guaranteeing the payment of principal and interest for approximately $1.33 billion of this debt.
Huge.
Specifically, the bonds maturing in 2044, 2047, and 2053. And because of that AGM insurance, those specific tranches maintain a stellar AA rating.
Even while the rest of the company is rated CCC.
Exactly. So how does that insurance actually work mechanically?
It's a profound protection. AGM doesn't just write a lump sum check and walk away. If Brightline defaults, AGM essentially steps into the shoes of the issuer. They are legally obligated to make the exact scheduled principal and interest payments to the bondholders on time until maturity.
Wow. So the investor continues to receive their yield as if nothing happened.
Right, while AGM takes over the legal nightmare of trying to recover the funds from Brightline's assets.
That's incredible.
And because AGM has immense financial strength, those insured bonds carry AGM's AA rating completely detached from Brightline's underlying chaos.
So we are looking at a single project with a wildly bifurcated risk profile.
Very much so.
I mean, if I'm holding one of those insured 2044 bonds, I'm wearing a financial life jacket. The project might go through a brutal restructuring, but my payments are guaranteed by a financial fortress.
Right.
But the remarketed series 2024 A bonds, the 985 million we are analyzing today, mature in 2057.
And they are uninsured.
Yes, they are.
If you hold that tranche, are you just swimming in the open ocean, taking the pure, unmitigated project risk of a distressed enterprise? Why take that risk?
Well, investors holding the uninsured long-term debt are essentially betting on the future upside.
The expansion.
And specifically, the proposed Tampa expansion.
Right. In July 2025, Tampa officials formally approved a motion to proceed with financing for the Ybor City expansion.
That expansion is the holy grail for this project's viability.
Okay.
Current projections suggest connecting Tampa could add another 650,000 monthly riders.
That's a lot of riders.
It is massive. Connecting the Gulf Coast to Orlando and Miami would transform this from a regional corridor into a true statewide network, massively boosting the utility and revenue potential of the entire system.
But the timeline is brutal.
It is.
The sources note that integrating the new rail line with the existing I-4 highway projects could delay the Tampa expansion by up to 10 years.
Yeah.
Why does it take a decade just to add one more city?
Because you aren't just laying track in an empty field. You are building high-speed rail inside the median of one of the busiest federal highways in the country.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That requires unprecedented coordination with the Florida Department of Transportation, integrating with existing highway construction timelines, undergoing massive federal environmental reviews,
right,
and managing incredibly complex engineering challenges around overpasses and interchanges.
And 10 years is an absolute eternity for a company that only has 225 days of cash left.
Exactly.
That Tampa expansion represents incredible long-term vision, but it does absolutely nothing to solve their immediate liquidity crisis.
Right. It requires billions more in capital expenditure while they're struggling to scrape together enough cash for next month's interest payment.
So they're stuck.
It's a beautiful transformative vision for 2036, but they have to figure out how to survive 2026 first.
It is just an incredible juxtaposition. To recap everything we've analyzed today for you, Brightline is a project with soaring top-line revenue.
Huge revenue.
Incredibly strong regional demographic tailwinds, and a highly valuable physical asset base effectively connecting Miami and Orlando.
But that operational promise is currently being suffocated by a $5 billion debt load built on deeply flawed pre-COVID ridership models.
Right. And the result is a $500 million net loss, severe liquidity depletion forcing draws on reserve accounts, and rating agencies warning that a distressed exchange is practically inevitable.
And for the investor, your fate depends entirely on the structural armor of your specific bond tranche.
Right. You are either protected by the AA guarantee of AGM insurance, or you are holding uninsured CCC debt, bracing for a massive haircut while hoping a 10-year Tampa expansion eventually bails you out.
It is a stark reminder that in the world of massive infrastructure finance, a beautiful, functional project does not automatically equal a safe investment.
If the underlying capital structure is detached from mathematical reality.
Precisely.
Which leaves us with a final thought for you to ponder. We started by looking at an unstoppable train that is actually speeding toward a financial wall. If a private infrastructure project of this immense scale one that actually succeeded in navigating the politics, laying the tracks, running the trains, and doubling its revenue in one of the fastest growing states in America.
Against all odds.
Right. If a project with all of those distinct advantages still faces a virtual certainty of financial collapse, what does that mean for the future of private infrastructure in America?
It's a heavy question.
Can private capital ever truly support the immense upfront weight of high-speed rail? Or is this proof that these massive networks will always eventually require public intervention to survive?
Something to think about.
Keep that question in mind the next time you see a headline about the next great transit revolution. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.